Good afternoon, everyone. Nice to thank you. Wow, that felt like President Preckwinkle there. Good afternoon, everyone. I haven't done that before, but it's kind of nice when you have such a great crowd. Thank you for being here. I met so many of you just walking around the room. I'm Dan Gibbons, and it's my honor to serve as the CEO of the City Club of Chicago and be able to share this long-cherished platform with so many great people that are doing great things around the city and county and state. And on behalf of our Board of Governors, one of whom is here with us, Francis Cao. Thank you, Francis. Welcome to City Club. Welcome back to City Club. We have been very busy. I don't like to admit that summer's over, but we actually had a really robust summer, which is unusual for City Club because people tend to spend more family time and all that, but we had a lot of interest in what we were doing, and we didn't want to miss any time. So we had a really busy summer, which then led us right into an incredible season of programming for the fall, which, as Amanda will tell you, was is an ongoing, very robust schedule. We had, I think, 8 programs in 1 month alone, and there are so many more coming. So we appreciate you being here time and time again to listen, to partake, and also to help establish solutions for some of the challenges that our city is facing. So thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you also to our sponsors who we couldn't be here without. And today we have Pace Suburban Bus. Pace team, you're here. Thank you. We have PH2 Square. Where is PH2 Square? Thank you for your support. And, of course, ZPD&A Architects, who have been supporters of City Club over the past few years. Thank you. As I said, we wouldn't be able to provide this platform without that support and with all of your membership. So please remember to come back, attend events, but also sign up for membership. There's plenty more to come. We have some great members, some familiar faces you've seen here before. Commissioner Chris Brown is here from Chicago Public Library. Commissioner, when are you coming back? No pressure, but we have he's one of our favorite speakers, and alongside our honored guest today, a great public servant. Thank you for that service. Thank you for being such a fan of City Club and understanding how much we can do here together. And in fact, I think you have One Book, One Chicago. You've been busy. One Book, One Chicago is, I haven't started, but it's tomorrow is when I get started, but it's also the name of the book, if I remember correctly. So everybody pick that one up. Maybe we'll have a little City Club book club. That'll get you back. Thank you for being here, Commissioner Brown from the Chicago Public Library, and Brenda Boy of course from the foundation. Thank you, Brenda, the CPL Foundation, great partners of ours. Nora Gaynor is here from the Art Institute of Chicago, great cultural institution who cares so much about access. Thank you, Nora, for all that you've done. Deb Carr is another one for a long time in this city in various roles, especially with institutions that are cultural institutions and opening the arts, opening science to such a broad audience. Deb, thank you from Intuit Museum. Melinda Metzger is here from Pace. Melinda, we mentioned Pace, but thank you for your leadership in transportation. You've done some amazing things, and I know there's always on tight budgets and with short time frames. Thank you for all your work and for being here today. Megan Ross from the Lincoln Park Zoo is here. Where's Megan? Hi, Megan. Welcome back. Emily Bloom is here, the Disability Lead Executive Director. Emily, there you are. So many great people, and this is just a sampling, right, of who's here. I see Chona and some of the folks from Navy Pier, so dedicated to access and providing access to everyone in these amazing institutions that make Chicago what it is. Thank you, Jonah. Thank you, Navy Pier. Thank you to any of you who I haven't mentioned. It is important to understand who's in this room and why you're all here. And I appreciate, and City Club appreciates all of your efforts. So there's one special guest that I just want to mention. I think she'll probably be mentioned by Commissioner Arfa, but she's very close with her, and her name is Nancy Bellow. Nancy Ballou, she is Rachel's mom. And we talk a lot about public service here. And Nancy is really kind of the definition of a public servant. She served over five mayors, over five different mayors, starting with Mayor Harold Washington. Is that correct? Even before. Oh, my gosh, since Richard J. Daley. So that is some staying power, and that proves a number of things, that you're good at your job, and that it's not about politics necessarily. It's about public service, right? And clearly some of that has rubbed off on your daughter, Rachel, who we're looking forward to hearing from. So thank you for your many years of public service, but for also sharing your daughter with the city of Chicago. I think we're also joined by four of the Disability Lead Institute fellows. Could you raise your hands? These fellows are emerging leaders who have all disability that is either visible, invisible, or acquired. They represent the diversity of our region and are very passionate about growing as leaders as they make change in our communities. And we always welcome emerging leaders here at City Club as we try to elevate the conversation and elevate the folks that are doing good things out there. So thank you to our Disability Lead Institute fellows. Now I get to do, this is the easy part, one of my favorite, personal favorite public servants is Rachel Arfa. And she is, she's a great friend of City Club, so I'll put that bias out there on the table. And we do love having her. She comes as a guest often and she speaks. But I think you're going to see, she's a visionary leader. And has so many, she thinks the things with big picture and with everyone in mind. You're going to see that, and you're going to understand, I think, why she does what she does. And it comes from her mother, it comes from her family. And you also know when you're proud of your work, when you bring your family to City Club and events like this, that's pretty meaningful. That's pretty neat. I think that shows some pride and I think you'll understand what drives her after you hear Commissioner Arfa. She was the first deaf person to serve as a member of a mayor's cabinet nationwide. How about that? How great is it? But how great is it that there's still firsts like that happening, right? But still breaking barriers. That just shows how much work there is to go, right? So that's incredible. And some of the things that she's done in the years that she's been at the city, the Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities Career Center really helps the private sector place folks with disabilities into incredible jobs and partners with the private sector. But she's also done that within the city, having access officers, as Commissioner Brown could attest to, in each department. That's amazing, where now folks in each department have an eye towards accessibility and folks with disabilities and elevating all these great public servants who are doing good things. Really an inspiring civil servant, and it's my honor to welcome her to this stage, Commissioner Rachel Arfa. Thank you for being here. Thank you. Please.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. My name is Commissioner Rachel Arfa of the Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities. Thank you so much to the Scenic Dump for hosting me once again. Dan, you have really transformed the Scenic Dump community to be a true exchange of ideas, and I always enjoy coming here and being the ideas and today being on stage. Thank you to Amanda here, the Scenic Dump, for all of your work behind the scene. You always do such a great job putting all the details together. And of course, to the person behind the camera, to ATWD, thank you for all the work behind the camera, and then added captions after the event. I want to thank Mayor Brenda Johnson and other my colleagues in the Johnson administration, and I'm proud of the work that we do for our disability community. And of course, I have to thank my team here at the Mayor's Office for people with disabilities who work every day to make our city the most accessible city in the nation. I would love for you to wave here if you're here from MRPD. I want to thank my parents, of course, my mother, Nancy Blue. Dan, that was a beautiful introduction, and I don't think I could top that. my mother, Nancy Blue, my brother, Michael, and my sister-in-law, Rosie, and this week I'll be celebrating my niece, Zoe's first birthday. So I am here with the support of my family. And I also want to thank my father and uncle who came here from Cleveland, Ohio to be here today. She definitely traveled the furthest. And I also thank everybody here for your support, including Mr. Meskram, Pace, and many of my colleagues here from the Pace Board of Directors who I have the privilege of serving with. Thank you for being here. And so many people here from so many different organizations who have all been mentioned. So thank you. I can't do this work without you. And of course, I want to thank our access providers. We have Tina Dillon in the back providing the open captioning that you see here. And then we also have our signing with interpreters, Jennifer McElroy, who's on stage right now, who works with me as my designated interpreter, and then Kristen Gasper as well. So before I start, I just want to share a quick housekeeping item here. So this is a photo here of myself with Mayor Brenda Johnson, my designated interpreter, and Deputy Mayor Jennifer Johnson. And we are walking fast at a hallway, and we are going up at the fifth room. And we are about to go to our kick-off meeting for this year for our Access Officer program, where we will be joined by our Access Officer who serves as the point of contact at Disability for the City of Chicago Department, who assists the agency. And in fact, we have a number of Access Officers here today. I see Arneen Irma here. They serve as their agency's access officer here. But there's one thing that is an easy detail that means the fact that I have a signing with interpreter here. So at this moment, I'm not thinking about how to communicate or whether or not I can understand what's being said. It has been there a design. So with that moment, I'm focused on doing my job, which is briefing my boss, Mia Charleston. To me, I think that's why this is a remarkable photo. Mr. September is also Deaf Awareness Month at the Arts Celebration at Columbia College Chicago happening right now. Columbia is the only program in the state of Illinois and in the city of Chicago that has a four-year program to train sign language interpreters in a pipeline, creates a pipeline for sign language interpreters. Even here, and I'm a PD, one of the things that I'm proud that I've accomplished is creating not one, not two, not three, but four sign language interpreter staff positions who be the one to provide communication action to deaf and hard of hearing staff members, but also to anyone who comes in to the city if wants to access city services or attend a program where you may see young interpreters standing next to the mayor at press conferences. Two of our four interpreters graduated from Columbia's program, and all four have served as mentors at Columbia. And I was sure that my brother graduated from Columbia as well. About a week or so ago, Columbia announced that they were going to close a number of programs. If one of those programs includes the sign language interpreter program, if it closes, it will be devastating to all of us, not just the deaf and hard of hearing community. Myself at the mayor's office have already reached out to Columbia. We're in the process of setting up a meeting, but I want you to be aware that this is an important issue for all of us, because it impacts all of our access. I had one housekeeping aside. So I'm going to start with the speech. It is so nice to be back here. And it's nice to be back at this stage. I was here 2 years ago. And as Dan shared, I have the distinction of being the first deaf person to speak from this podium. I'm honored, of course, but I'm not surprised. Being the first is a bit of a theme in my life, in my career. You know, as Dan Sheehan, I was the first deaf commissioner to serve at a mayor's cabinet nationwide. I'm happy to share that there are now three other deaf commissioners serving at a mayor's cabinet. They serve in the cities of Washington, D.C., New York City, and Detroit, Michigan. So often when I tell people about my job at this milestone, they will ask me, when you were a little girl, could you have imagined this? And I say, yes. I credit my parents, of course, my mother, who instilled in me a belief that I could do anything, and I also credit my father, Sid Iver, and clearly from this picture, my dad believed that I could take out the world, and he wanted to show me the world as well. And we all miss him very much, but with both of my parents, they instilled in me that strong belief. But at a young age, I learned that my house was not the norm. I would learn that the rest of the world saw me differently. In my life's work, and the reason I am in public service, and the reason I am here, is to change that. So my journey finding for people with disabilities began dark before I made it to City Hall. It began when I was in third grade, right here at the playground. When I was 8 years old, I made some new friends. We hung at the monkey bars, we ran at the field, we swung at the swings, and we played. And then they saw me in the classroom, and our friendship changed, not because we had a fight or we grew apart, but because they discovered that not only was I keeping up with them in the classroom, I was smarter than they were. I mean, by third grade, I was already reading at a 12th grade reading level, so we were reading the Babysitter's Clubs, but I was also reading Grapes of Wrath. So those girls liked me, but they thought I was helpless, and that they could be my helper, helping the deaf girl with what she needed. They didn't like me as much once I became their competition. Everybody had to see me as an equal. Reverence, but they had to see me as the better student. It was okay when I was their token disabled friend, but not okay to be at the top of the class. At the time, I was hurt and I felt betrayed, but as I grew older, maybe an exchange, and I came to realize that what those girls doing was wrong, but it was not uncommon. Our society teaches people to expect that for people with disabilities, to pity us, to see us as dependent, or sometimes once as a burden. In growing up in school, I encountered teachers who often had lower expectations for me, and some who did not make an effort to ensure that I was understanding everything that was said in class, or were reluctant to go out of their way so that I could participate. And even though this is what I needed in order for me to participate in my own education, when I enrolled in the school representative said to my mother, "I know what Rachel could do for us, but I don't know what we could do for her." And this passed for a minute. A school whose primary focus is educating young people had done two things. Number one, they told me I would be their token disabled student. And number two, I would be their token disabled student there to teach other students about disability. And number two, before I even come into a classroom, they had already abandoned their duty to make their learning environment welcome and accessible for me. This experience taught me that as a young girl, the world expected me to be a disabled, helpless girl, and that it made the world feel more comfortable. I responded by not accepting this narrative. It's then I became an advocate, and I learned how to advocate for myself. And here, I give credit to my parents. My mother used to say to me, "These are the colors you put out." There were no excuses. It is then I was expected to work twice as hard, and I did. I did not have accommodations, and I was aware that I missed a lot of information simply because I could not hear, so I would read lecture materials, and I did my best to further the gaps. Still to here today, I think things have worked out okay. I also need to acknowledge my extended family, a family friend and mentor, Sharon Gilliam. She was a trailblazer who broke barriers. First, she served as the first Black female budget director of the Mayor here in Washington. That when Mia Zuria became Mia, she again broke barriers by becoming the first Black woman to serve as chief of staff at the city of Chicago. So when I had my bat mitzvah, Sharon gave me this book. It is a book of women's history. And in this book, she wrote a note. And I am so struck by the potential that Sharon saw in me at a very awkward age, 13. And the note reads, "Dear Rachel, Russell, and I know that your name will one day be on or in a book of women's history because you have achieved so much already. Your bat mitzvah marks accomplishments attained, yet more surely to be attained. Them, Sharon." And I identify with Sharon as a trailblazer. And all that she had to fight through. Gary Johnson, who was previously the president of the Chicago History Museum, which is now featured in an exhibit, a history exhibit. Talk about history, shared the shields on Big First, It Easy, because everybody celebrates you. And that it is more difficult for those who follow. I might for the name of the first, and I also brought a mixture to pave the path for others so that while I am first, I'm not the last. And I do this even with the ableism that exists. I have accomplished so much, but I want to be clear. Ableism has a cost. So much time is spent standing up for myself, advocating for accessibility, and pushing back against ignorance and stereotypes that made it harder, not just as a student, but as a leader in my school and community. My name changed when I went to college at the University of Michigan. If you know anything about UFM, you probably know that we alumni have a very high opinion at our school. and maybe a different opinion of Ohio State. We think everything and everyone associated with our school is the best. So when I stepped upward at campus in Ann Arbor, everyone saw me in a way that I had never experienced. Becoming a leader was not a possibility or a dream. It was the expectation. So for the first time, I was given every accommodation I needed for class or for leadership activities. Before, I spent all my energy fighting for what I needed, and now I could do what I always wanted to do, which was to fight for others. After graduating from Ann Arbor, I moved to Washington, D.C., and I worked at Capitol Hill for the Senate Judiciary Committee. And then I went to the University of Wisconsin for my law degree. And for the last 17 years, I've been a civil rights attorney and have worked as the commissioner of the Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities, working to make Chicago more inclusive and accessible. We still have so much work to do, but I'm proud to say that earlier this year, the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Bar Association awarded me the inaugural Claudia L. Groton Woman in Law Award. And I please this, thank you. And I wish this not to talk about the award, but to talk about Claudia and what she means to me. For those of you that don't know, Claudia is the first Black deaf attorney, and she was also a President Obama appointee. And she's the personal hero of mine and a mentor. And what she taught me, and what she spoke about this summer when she gave me the award, was that even though we're attorneys, we need to change more than just laws or policies. It is just as important to change the culture. If we need to make accessibility a priority for everybody, not just a single department or a single organization, but all of us, we need to fundamentally change the way the world sees people with disabilities. So that's what I'm going to try to do the rest of my time up here. So there are three myths about the disability community that I want to challenge today. Because I think they are absolutely critical to changing how people see us. And the first myth is that people think that the disability community is small. The reality is that we're too big to ignore. The Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities at the Chicago Department of Public Health worked together at a groundbreaking data survey of Chicago's neighborhood. And here, I want to thank not only Claire Stanhope on my team who worked at this, and then also Commissioner Anke and their CDPH research team. because working together, we bowed simply in a praise that I want to share with you. First, one number that we've heard before is that one in four adults in Chicago have a disability. In many of our neighborhoods, that number is higher. Let's focus on the Austin community. The research identified that the Austin community in the city of Chicago has these many people in the community, 25,609 people. That means for every three people, one of them has a disability. Let's soak that up for a minute. So 23 means native is sitting on the table, and 10 people, at least three people have a disability. Similar to Austin, Belmont Creek in Uptown, they also have a ratio of 1 in 3 people with a disability. If we talk about the Burnside neighborhood, that is actually 1 in every 2 people has a disability in the Burnside community. Well, another way to put it is, in the neighborhoods like Austin, Belmont Creek, and Uptown, the number of people with disabilities is greater than the population of some towns in our state, such as Oak Brook, Barrington, Libertyville, or Kankakee. At your tables is a two-page summary. We will be releasing a more comprehensive report later this year. So the second main thing I want to address is about how we lead. People think that we will be getting into positions of power or influence, that we only fight for other people with disabilities. The reality is we fight for everyone. One example is the keep on our physical spaces. Our physical spaces matter. So the mayor's office for people with disabilities has 2 locations, one in City Hall and one at the west side of Chicago. And when I became commissioner, I made a choice that we would go to transfer the space at the west side in a way that could benefit everybody in the neighborhood. The neighborhood is in the Illinois Medical District. And that means that there are people who drive or walk or bike by the building who may be going to work or getting medical treatment at the any number of the hospitals in the Illinois Medical District. And many of them may be people who may acquire a disability, such as from gun or community violence, who are certainly become disabled. And I wanted to get people that I have yet to meet whom I wanted them to know your life is not over because you now have a disability, and I want people to see themselves the way that I see you. If for them to know that the city of Chicago has services and can provide support. So I work with the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events in the Great Chicago Artist Sam Cook. He'll be creating a 60-piece mural at the outside of this building that shows everyone how the disability community sees ourselves. It is also with made possible by feedback and engagement from it with our disability community. It used to be possible to find images on Google of teachers with disabilities, doctors with disabilities, journalists with disabilities. I wanted to add to these images so that you could see representation of doctors with disabilities, teachers with disabilities, yes, journalists with disabilities. So you could buy these images here. It almost immediately after the mural went up, I got a message from a medical student at UIC with a disability who said how inspired she was to see another doctor with a disability at the image at her way to her class in medical school at UIC. We were already achieving that desired outcome. The mural also featured poetry written by Lily Diego Charlson. She allowed us to put on her poem, Disability Pride. So also over time we see how people are interacting with our space. What used to be very plain, it's now very vibrant. So now people even come and they want to know about our service and they want to ask questions. If we had transformed the building from what was called a field office to a community center. If this is what we, that we built trust with our community. So I hope that you have a chance to come by and see it. And there's also audio description at the side of the building. So if you come by, there's QR code or at the internet and our website, you can access the audio description for these images as you're moving around the building. Some other ways that we fight for our community and serve our community. We partner with either SMCD Community Services. We have a CEO, Jamal Malone, here. Took about $5 million in a miracle rescue plan act fund to invite her to another cash grant to students with disabilities in grades critical to through 12 grade. And information is on the table. I would love your help to connect the word out so that we can reach as many families as possible. Our deadline for all applications is November 15th. We also partner with the Senator Tammy Duckworth at the United States Department of Justice at an earmarked fund services for people who acquire a disability through gun and community violence and ensure that our wraparound services are accessible. And I'm Pusha and my team works at that program team. In our accessibility compliance team led by Deputy Commissioner Tom Chajansky, in partnership with our Facilities Department and the Public Buildings Commission, works to increase accessibility of all of our city buildings. We also work with city departments on program access. We also launched the housing locator to help people with disabilities find accessible housing. This is on our website. This is the new service that we launched this year. And then we've also transformed what it means to provide communication access by bringing out staff and medical sign language interpreters. So I have one more myth that I want to discuss today. And the third environment is about what it's like to work with us. Just like when I was a kid, sometimes people think it's hard to work with someone with a disability. You know, the myth is that it's complicated and it's expensive. The reality is not hard. So for the last 2 years, we've been opened up we've been providing services to job seekers with disabilities through our career center, a center we hope to help candidates with disabilities find jobs and succeed in their job. And here I want to thank Deputy Commissioner Christina McLean and Lauren Huberman for all their incredible leadership on this. We have worked with hundreds of job seekers from all 50 worlds and helped them find employment in government, small business, large companies, and hospitals throughout the city. We've also tracked the data very closely. So in our first year of providing services, we know that the average job seeker nationwide, it takes about 180 days to find a job. At Career Center in our first year, we were able to help people find jobs in 81 days. In our model, there's an holistic one center, not a job seeker. Most models require a job seeker to squeeze themselves into an existing mood. But what we do is we start by identifying each job seeker's goals and interests in what they need to be career ready. If we provide housing, they got disability disclosure and support in the visible accommodation process. And then we also work with the employer to provide technical assistance and one-on-one support. After we get questions about accommodation, the average cost of accommodations is about $500 or less. This could include a modified work schedule, working from home, assistive technology, getting assignments by email instead of verbally, to a quiet place to work, even if there are accommodations. Then have a class, they can be budgeted for, just like the building you work in has a budget for the elevator breaks. You can also build into your budget class for captioning, for signing of a tutorial, for audio describers. It is much easier, but there is an available budget for any anticipated and unanticipated need. I guarantee your organization already knows how to do this. I bet you ask your CEO what they need to be successful each day. It's the same. So at the end of every speech, the most common questions I'm asked are, what can I do? What needs to change? Where do I start? My answer is simple. It starts with the lesson I learned here, not at Washington, D.C., not at City Hall, but on the playground. Some of those don't treat us differently. Yes, I'm damp, but I'm not special. Yes, I need accommodation. Yes, I need support. But so do you, so do all leaders. All executives, it's common for CEOs to have a chief of staff and executive assistant. And many rookie peers need flexible schedules or outside childcare. When you started a new company, depending on where you work, you might be asked, do you prefer Mac or PC? Do you prefer an iPhone or an Android? Not every question, this accommodation. It is a reminder that we know when we do something significant, we don't do it alone. We all need support. We all need each other. And alone, there's only so much we could do. But together, we can make Chicago more inclusive, more welcoming, more accessible for everyone. And together, we can achieve something that I fought for my whole life, to make Chicago the nation's most accessible and inclusive city in the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I knew we were in for something special today, and I only disagree with one thing that you said. You are a very special person, and I think this room would tend to agree with me. I think we have a few more minutes. We have 2:15, right, Amanda? Okay, we do have, and I didn't mention this earlier, if you do have a question, please write it out on a blue form, and Amanda can grab it. I have a couple pre-submitted questions and one of my own. Can I start with my own? How's Ruby the dog? And could you tell us more about Ruby and about what you're doing there?
So I have a good retriever named Ruby. She would be mad and I did not include her in this presentation. I'll do that next time, Dan. Sorry about that. She will be 2 years old in December, and she loves to wake me up every morning by putting her paws and shaking my bed. She's the best alarm clock around.
Meeting Ruby the dog convinced me to attempt to have a City Club dog. As a, we were talking about that, and these are little things that make big differences.
Maybe a membership for
maybe a membership
for dogs.
Yeah, there we go. We are about inclusivity. Okay, one question I have here from Marquise Miller from the Obama Foundation. Are you here? There we go. Right back there. Welcome. How's the city's employee resource group for people with disabilities going?
Thank you, Marcus, for being here from the Obama Foundation. Before you left the city, I had the honor and privilege of getting to work with you when you served as our city chief diversity officer. If you want to wave your hand. And I used to talk to Marcus a lot about Michigan and Ohio State. So with Marcus, you were here, we were able to work together to launch the City of Chicago's first employee resource group for people with participate in the UDPWAPC work group, and here can I thank Christina, who has been a key part of making this happen. This would not have happened without Christina. And I'm proud to serve as the executive sponsor. And we also have Bernardo Gomez, who's a member here. I don't know if anybody else here is supposed to be up there and some green activity for National Disability Employment Awareness Month in October. We've already been thinking ahead and planning for that because it's so important. But I think it's an effort worth making because it's so important for disabled employees to have space to come together and support one another. And I know the Capitol Abide is here for Rush University Medical Center, and he's also worked at the ABCS group there. And I don't know if there's any other ERGs here as well, but it's a really great tool to bring together disabled employees and support one another and succeed. Thanks for asking, my friends.
Great. Always appreciate those good examples and best practices. Joy Wagner. Joy, are you here? There we go, in the back there. Joy's a nurse. Mentioned that she struggles to when she goes to the city. She's a disabled nurse with 21 years of experience making accessible spaces for people with mobility issues. Thank you for that. How do I get involved in your efforts?
Thank you for the question. There are so many different ways. First, there are so many great cultural organizations here. So we have the Obama Foundation, which is working on accessibility. We have Michael Ross at the Park Zoo team. We have we have the Chicago Public Library. We have the Intuit Center as well. We have the Chicago Humanities Festival, which provides some phenomenal accessibility. City Colleges of Chicago provides accessibility. Who else am I missing in the room? But we need all of us to be involved and help, and I'm happy to talk to you more as well. Thank you.
Okay. This just came in. You might want to read it with me because I'm going to screw this up. From Harold Pollack. Thank you, Harold, from the University of Chicago and a great partner city club. Medicaid is just so critical to sustain services to meet the needs of many people with disabilities. Has Chicago considered creating a mayor's office of Medicaid to ensure Chicagoans with disabilities and those who serve them are properly served in a financially sustainable way?
Thank you for the question here. So first, I'm sure that we have so many tools to help people with disability. First, at July 1st of this year, we successfully phased out subminimum wage to the Department of Labor through a TC waiver, which allowed people with disabilities to be paid piecemeal. That's a powerful message to say people with disabilities must be paid at least minimum wage or higher. Many of you in this room are partners in that work as well, and it's so important. And MOPD, we support our job seekers with any financial needs, and that we also have a benefits counselor that can advise people on how to work and maintain the benefits, and several other tools that we could really help people to thrive in our city.
Okay, thank you. And I think this is our last one. Part statement. I'll just read the question. Could you talk about housing, accessible housing, and how we can do more in some of your efforts?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we do at our accessibility compliance team is we create an accessibility inspector who now go out into developments while they're being built to check for accessibility. We To make sure that new projects that are being built meet accessibility guidelines that are either plans or the drawings, and that we also have a housing locator to help people with disabilities find accessible housing, which we launched just a few months ago. And we would love for you to use that and to share that as a tool in vision to the local partnership with the mayor and other departments around increasing accessibility.
Great. That is all the questions that I have. I do have, and I feel like this is some old school Ed Mazur or Paul Green, but I have some homework for everyone in the room. What I'd like to do is encourage everybody to get on our website and find this video of this presentation and share it with somebody or with your larger network. Maybe share it with a family who's struggling with how to raise a child with a disability, or maybe an awkward 13-year-old, you know, who may not believe that they can actually make a difference in public service. Or maybe you share it with your company or your museum or your institution as a training guide. You know, I mean, just watching and understanding a personal story of success and overcoming what used to be a disability that is now something that you've been able to rise above and I think sharing this, we have our videos of all of our speeches, and this would be an incredible resource, I think, to be able to share so that so many others can hear that story and have just a better understanding of what they can do in their world and how they can help somebody else to just make this city a little bit better. That's your homework. That's after you read tomorrow. So it can be 2 days from now. the rest of your homework is to go enjoy this beautiful Chicago week and enjoy the weather. Thank you very much, Commissioner Rachel Arfa. Thank you all for being here. Welcome back to City Club anytime, all of you. We'll see you all soon. Thanks, Commissioner.